day, everyone. Welcome back to the third hour of Superstar Wednesday. This is Authors on the Air, and I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. As I said, it's Superstar Wednesday. My third interview for the day is best-selling author Peter Swanson. His new book is All the Beautiful Lies. Let me tell you a little bit about Peter, things that I learned. If you don't know about his brilliant book, The Girl with a Clock of a Heart, you have missed out on some amazing reading. He has also written The Kind Worth Killing, just another spectacular piece of work, Her Every Fear, which was an NPR Book of the Year. You know NPR is my favorite radio station. He also has had all of his books translated into 30 languages. I don't even know 30 countries. So that's pretty cool.
Not all of the books, but Kind Worth Killing has been translated into over 30, yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Without further ado,
Peter Swanson. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
You know, I was reading a little bit about you, and I also found out that some of your stories have appeared in Asimov Science Fiction. I'm a huge fan of science fiction, but it's not the genre that you're writing in, at least in your books. Go ahead.
Strangely enough, what appeared in Asimov Science Fiction in that magazine was actually a poem. I wrote kind of a strange science fiction poem back when I was writing a lot of poetry, and I didn't know where to send it, so I tried them, and I got an acceptance. I was kind of thrilled. But, yeah, I have written a couple sci-fi stories that have not been published, but that was, in fact, a poem.
Interesting, because you've written in the Atlantic Monthly, Measure, The Guardian, The Strand, and Yankee Magazine. Now, I know that you are in New England, and so Yankee Magazine makes sense to me, but your books are crime fiction, and
yep.
Yet you have a very diverse writing history. Your portfolio is quite diverse. What came first?
Really poems and stories. I'm definitely one of those writers who began when I was young. At around the age of 8 or 9, when I was, reading Roald Dahl or The Hardy Boys,
sure,
or something, I was always trying to write my own little versions of those stories. So I was always, picking up, writing poems. I got into poetry partly because of Roald Dahl, because like in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the Oompa Loompas,
yes,
do all their songs, and they're kind of like poems. I,
yes,
love those. And then I just kept writing stories and poetry all through college and in my 20s, and it wasn't really until I was in my mid-30s that I decided to try and write a crime novel. And that's, so that was, I was a late bloomer for as far as novels go.
Do you prefer one type of writing over the other?
Well, it turns out that I completely prefer writing long-form fiction. Writing novels is absolutely my favorite. There's something about being in the midst of a story that you're working on, that you're not constantly starting and finishing pieces, that I really, really love. And I didn't know this until I started it. It just felt daunting to me to sit down and write a novel. But somehow I think writing a novel is no more daunting and could be less daunting than, say, writing a short story, where, a short story, everything hinges on, every word in that story, whereas a novel is a little, you can meander a little.
Yeah, I was talking to Seamus Heffernan, a debut novelist prior to you being on. He writes in noir crime fiction, and we talked about that. I have read some particularly fantastic short stories that seem to encapsulate an entire lifetime of a character and a story in, 5,000 words or 10,000 words, and it's amazing to me that. I think that takes a talent that a lot of authors don't have. Our company publishes anthologies, and a lot of times when we invite writers to come be a part of it, they say they don't know how to do a short story. So I think it's really something special when a short story really encapsulates a life or an event. Don't
you? A great
you?
Story. Yeah, just for me, it's the same with poetry. Like, there are not that many great poems and that I've read, but when I read a great poem, when I really fall in love with a poem, I'm so amazed by it because it's so short and it gives all this meaning in life. And you're right, like a really good story does the same thing. It can produce all the emotions that a novel can produce, but in a shorter period of time. And I do think it's a hard form to write in. I just was reading a biography of Daphne du Maurier, who wrote Rebecca, of course, and she was a terrific short story writer, two of which got turned into very good movies, but Don't Look Now is a great – that might be too horrific for you. I know that you're not a big fan of horror stories, but that's like a scary story that's like a novel in 5,000 words, exactly what you were saying.
Yeah, I think it's really it really is a credit to the writer who is able to switch up the format of their writing, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. And nonfiction, particularly, it's almost impossible to do a short story. I think that's why I like a really well-written magazine or newspaper articles, because you almost are getting, and it doesn't happen all the time. I mean, it's got to be someone with some talent, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's talent and also hard work. I mean, especially, I'm amazed by those people who can switch from fiction and then write like a biography of someone.
Yes.
That to me is like two different muscles. I write short fiction in between writing books. So that's what I do. I like, I always have a few ideas floating around that are not quite books. And so I take a little break in between books and work on a couple stories.
I have been told that writing short stories, particularly 3,000 to 5,000 words, are kind of like writing sprints. If you're feeling you're not quite ready to delve into the novel length writing, and maybe you're stumbling around trying to get back into it after not have written for whatever period of time. One writer told me that she often will write short stories or even some flash, just to get her brain engaged in that, in telling the story right then and there, without all the gloss, without the narrative description, and so on and so forth. Do you find that to be true?
There is a muscle that comes with a short story, which is you've got to start right away and start telling the story. Then you got to do the middle, then you got to do the end, and you got to do that really fast. And it forces you to really pare it down to everything that's important. It also allows you, or it allows me anyway, to do some things that I wouldn't normally do in long fiction, like a really sort of dark idea that I wouldn't want to explore for a long time. Like, I can put it in a short story. The other thing I think is just, when you're a writer, you got to write. So all writing is good. If you're working on a short story, that's good. If you're working on a nonfiction piece, if you're working on your novel, if you're writing a poem, I mean, that's the key is just to keep writing. And just as important is, of course, to keep reading.
Now, so is it true, and I would assume it is, that you cannot be a writer unless you are a reader?
I certainly think it's true. I mean, I also don't understand, like, if someone's not a reader, why they would even want to be a writer. So, yeah, if you're not reading a ton of books, I think you're going to have a tough time being a writer. I think it's important to constantly be absorbing words,
yes,
and stories and characters, and it doesn't even matter what you read. It's not like you only have to read the classics to really see how it's done. I mean, you can read anything that you like to read, and in fact, if you're reading something that's not working, as a writer, I always think, why isn't this working? What's going wrong here? Why am I suddenly in the middle of this book and it's not interesting to me anymore? And I try and use it as a study, a way to sort of figure out how writing works.
It's a teaching tool for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You like to tell stories when you were young. Did your family encourage you to do that?
Well, my family definitely encouraged me to read a lot. I mean, there were lots of books around the house,
sure.
and my parents both read. And so, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not sure they were. I think I drove my mom a little crazy when I was a little kid. I used to follow her around, either telling her, you know, reading out loud to her from my favorite books or telling her stories. But she was certainly encouraging. They weren't like, oh, you should grow up to be a writer. I just, it's what I started to do, and I kept doing it.
You know, I live geographically in the South, although I'm not in the South. Florida is not considered the South, as you well know. But Southern storytelling is legendary. It's how family histories were passed down. It was entertainment and everything. You are from the Northeast. Do you think that there is regional storytelling? And does that shape who you are as a writer? I'm always curious about that because I have a lot of friends who are hail from other parts of the country who seem to have their own form of storytelling. Is there anything to compare to Southern storytelling?
I think there isn't, at least in my family, and I can't speak for all of the Northeast. But I do think there is this tradition in the South of being a storytelling culture. And I think, and again, this is a huge generalization, but people in the Northeast are a little more reticent, a little don't necessarily talk about their past as much.
Yes, you're right.
I didn't come from a big storytelling family, but I came from a family that loved to read. And liked stories, but it's not. And maybe I'm a different type of writer because of that upbringing. Like I write, the stories I write are more about what I'd love to read as opposed to stories from my own life. So I'm sure there is a New England. I mean, there is a. If you go into northern New England, sort of the territory that in Maine that Stephen King can kind of explore, or Richard Russo, some of the more rural areas up there, there is a kind of sarcastic storytelling, like shooting straight from the hip type of attitude that I think is kind of New England.
And I think you might be right. My folks are from New England, and they, unlike Southern families who will not only tell you about their crazy grandpa, they'll trot him right out of the closet and let you meet him.
Right.
New Englanders are not like that. They're a little bit more conservative and are, those are things we don't talk about type of thing. So I understand that. And yet, there is a huge, huge resource of talent in the West Coast, and they have a completely different way of telling story, I think. I might be wrong about that. What do you think?
I think you probably know better than I do because you've spent so much time talking to all these writers. I do know that California, and a few times I've been there, has such a different feel to it than New England, and it's this sort of – people are just have this sort of openness and friendliness to them, and it's a little disconcerting when you come from, I live outside of Boston, and I grew up in Massachusetts,
right.
And it's just, I don't believe actually that people in Boston are unfriendly. I actually don't think that's the case, but people in Boston don't present as friendly, and
right.
It's just they hold back more. But, yeah, California,
right.
It's a totally different feel.
Do you think if you live someplace else you would write differently? Or do you think what you write is just ingrained in you?
That's a really good question. I think if I'd grown up a different place, yes, absolutely I would write differently.
Sure.
I think if I moved to California now at my age, no, I think I would continue to write the way I wrote. I think of James Joyce, who only lived in Dublin in Ireland, I think, until maybe his early 20s, and then moved to France for the rest of his life, and then wrote only about Ireland. I mean, he never wrote about France. So I do think it's more where you were raised and where you were formed.
It's kind of in your blood, a little bit in your DNA. It's kind of ingrained in you, it seems.
I think so.
Let's talk about this new book. I want to talk about All the Beautiful Lies. First of all, it is a great title and a great cover. It is just amazing. Did you choose the cover, the title yourself, or was it a collaborative effort with your publisher?
Well, I ultimately chose it in the sense that I was probably the first person who said that title's name, but it was a collaborative effort because we were working on coming up with a title. I have most of my titles get thrown out, but not always. But so we were coming up with, and we were kind of thinking, what do we want to emphasize in this? And we were thinking about dishonesty and the word lie, and then at one point I think that just jumped into my head, and as soon as it did, I kind of knew instantly what it meant in terms of the story, and it was much more about the lies that we tell ourselves as opposed to the lies we tell others. And so, you know, as soon as I kind of said it, and then my publisher heard it, and we agreed it would work.
You know, it works just on a physical level, too, when you consider Grace and Alice, who are both very beautiful women and who have a sensuality about them and a sexuality about them. So I think it works that way, too. And yes, I understand what you're saying, because this is a story about lie upon lie upon lie upon lie. It's a very you question what's going on all the time. It struck me that I didn't feel confused. I was just saying, okay, where do I find the thread to tug to unravel this? And I just had to wait to get through the story. And that's amazing, because I read a lot of books, and so usually I try to figure them out. Sometimes they're obvious. I just really struggled with this one, which is really kudos to you. You've gotten rave reviews about it. Everybody's talking about this book. I've read all the reviews that you've gotten from all the editorial places. It's really a spectacularly, once again, well-done book. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Where did this story idea come from for you?
Yeah, it was a couple different ideas that I've had for a while, but the initial spark was the idea of this son who finds out about his father after his father dies. So the father is dead in chapter one. There's a graduating son, Harry, who moves back in with his stepmother and thinks he knows his father really well. Turns out he didn't. And I love this idea. I think of, whodunits in the classic sense are so fascinating because they start off with a murder, and then as we progress through time, we actually learn more and more about the past, because what we're learning is what led up to that murder. So I love the idea of a son who basically discovers that his father had a secret life, and people are telling him about his father, and he doesn't know who to trust because he doesn't have his father around anymore. So that was the original sort of spark, and then I always had this idea for the character of Alice, who, without giving too much away, is someone who has a villainous side but doesn't really know it. And I was really fascinated with that idea that we all position ourselves as the heroes of our own stories.
Sure.
So villains don't always know they're villains. We're always the protagonists. So I was really interested in that idea as well.
And it works so well in this book. So congratulations on that. Do you ever think about doing series, Peter? Or do you like doing standalone work? I know how I feel about certain books, that I want to know more about the characters. But sometimes when the story is over, it's over and it's done. How do you feel about that?
Well, I love standalones. I love books that contain the entire world of that book, and I like writing them too. Now, I'm not averse entirely to writing a series, but I, you know, in some ways it would be interesting to sort of just jump back into kind of a detective character. The main thing stopping me is I don't necessarily want to write a crime novel that's purely detective-based.
Right.
Because what I really love to do is explore the sort of interior worlds of the antagonists as well, and then also just all the people on the boundaries. And often series, you know, you're following mainly the detective. Not always, but so, you know, one day I think it would be fun to try one, to try and create a really great detective and then just do sort of a more of a straight ahead whodunit, and see if I can continue with that character, but not right now.
Do you like ensemble casts in the books that you read?
I like both. I mean, I write a certain type of way, and I definitely write with ensemble casts. But, you know, I just read, I just read Jonathan Ames' novella, You Were Never Really Here, a very violent, short, hard-boiled story that's now a movie, I think. And it was just one, it was really just one character, his world, and I love that. So I like them both, but I'm definitely drawn to writing with ensemble casts. I think it's just, I love getting multiple perspectives on one event. I think is really interesting.
Do you find it just as easy to write your female characters as your male characters?
I do. I think of them all imaginatively. So I mean, I think people ask, like, how do you write a female character? And I'm all my characters are imaginations of mine. So I'm always imagining what it would be like to be this person. So it's just one more step to say they're female. I don't have a necessarily a great method for doing this. I think as someone who has obsessively read multiple books my whole life, you know, half probably by women and about women, I think that's where some of it is coming from. And some of it is just saying, you know, what would this character feel right now? And sometimes gender might come into play on that, and sometimes it doesn't. But I don't find it particularly difficult. I find it interesting, actually. I actually love to write from female perspective.
How does a writer differentiate the voice of characters between male and female? Insofar as let me qualify this question. I have an embarrassment of riches by receiving so many books from publishers for consideration for the network. And sometimes I'll start reading a book, and if someone was reading it to me and they just blocked out the name of the character, the voice would be identical. And that is frustrating to me because men and women do not speak the same way. How do you change the timbre, the voice, the cadence to own so it is unique to that character? Do you read dialogue out loud? Do you have someone read it to
you? Oh, you're
talking
about dialogue.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a specific thing. I do say it out loud, and I do run it in my head. And I do a sort of a weird, I gesture with it. I mean, I try and picture it. And what's odd is you're of course not necessarily reproducing an incredibly realistic dialogue. Because if you read a transcript, for example, of an actual dialogue, you know, it's filled with a lot of, like I just said, you knows and ums and different.
Right.
Non-sequiturs.
Sure.
You don't want to write like that. I mean, not necessarily. So I just try and make it sound natural. I really try and steer away from ever moving the plot along through dialogue. I mean, you can always smell that phony dialogue when someone's like, I used to feel that way before my husband left me.
Right.
You know that they're trying to get a point across. In terms of male and female, sometimes I think about people I talk to. Sometimes, you don't want to get into cliches, of course, so you don't want a woman to necessarily be, sound flighty or overly emotional, because plenty of men are emotional and plenty of women are not in the way they speak.
Yes.
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, it's a really good question, and I'm not quite sure how I do it, and if it works, I'm happy. But I do sort of speak it in my head, and I try really hard to sort of, have that BS detector going on that I can hear a bad line.
Well, it's interesting to me that Grace and Alice have such a different speech way of speaking. They're just so different. And that is really important, I think, also. Because as much as probably men stereotype women and think we're all talking the same way and about the same things, they're wrong. We have – and so it was delightful to read your dialogue and about your characters, by the way.
Good.
Thank you for that. Thank you for creating such a wonderful book. It was just a pleasure to read. What are you writing now?
My next book is actually finished. By finished, I mean it's sort of being edited right now. So I still have some work to do with it. And it's a standalone psychological thriller. It's an ensemble cast. The two primary characters are a woman and a man who live next to one another, kind of in a suburban neighborhood. They're both married to other people, and it's about their relationship. And this should come out about a year, I'd say.
Do you write other things in between? Are you writing poetry? Are you writing short stories? Tell me what you do between books. I would imagine, writing a book is no easy feat. I don't know how long it takes you. I know some people spend a lot of time because they're doing research and they want every word to be the work to be pristine. And I appreciate that. There are others. I just spoke to Iris Johansson in the beginning of the night, and she writes 4 books a year, and it's amazing to me.
That's amazing to me
crazy.
Too. Although I know that, so I write a book a year. And I know that for some people, they're like, oh, my God, that's amazing. Takes me 4 years to write a book. So
it would take me no years. I would never be able to write a book. I just could never do it. I admit that,
Yeah. In between, I write a couple short stories, usually just to a couple ideas I've had. And then I kind of jump back in. I'm usually already thinking about my next book when I'm kind of closing in on the end of my current one. It's kind of, bubbling up.
I asked my last guest, is it true that authors are the biggest snoops, that you see something and you are creating a what-if scenario, or you're identifying a scenario that's absolutely not based in reality, or you overhear something and you think, oh, that's interesting. I could work with that. He claims to have, pieces, scraps of napkins and envelopes and everything with all these little notes jotted down. Are you one of those people, or do you just kind of wait for it to hit you?
When I'm out and about, I am a snoop, and I definitely, want to know sort of what my neighbors are up to. I love to I like to hear people's story. I love when you go to a party and the chit-chat gets boring, but then suddenly someone's telling you about their marriage failing or something, and part of me is sad for them, and then part of me is like, oh my God, suck in every detail, because I want to hear what this person's emotions are like. I'm listening, and I do kind of go to coffee shops in the afternoon. I do most of my writing at home, in my home office, and then to get out of the house, I go to a coffee shop in the afternoon. And lately, I've been going to one that has a lot of students there, and So I have been listening in a little bit, and again, this is a dialogue thing, but just listening in to the conversations and how people talk and, you know, what they're talking about. And it's, you know, sometimes it's dull, but it's often interesting.
Funny. How do you know what story you're going to write next?
It's the story that I can't stop thinking about. So I get lots of ideas, and most of those ideas disappear out of my head because I stop thinking about them. But if there's an idea that I keep thinking about and I keep adding to, and that happens naturally, then, you know, eventually I'll have to start writing it.
Do you enjoy writing? I mean, not the end of it, not when you know, are putting your little hashtag at the end, but do you actually like to sit down and get into that zone and put words on paper?
I don't like to get into the zone. That part is kind of a daily struggle, which is I sit down and it's looking at that page and getting to the blank part and having to sort of start writing it. I procrastinate and I kind of do a lot of things to avoid that starting. And it's frustrating. You know, it's almost a daily frustration. Now, once I'm in the zone, like once you start writing there, if you have a good morning of writing, get a few sentences down and then suddenly you're kind of doing it. That I love. But it's not pure joy. It's hard work. And and some mornings are more frustrating than others. So yeah, I do love it once I'm going well with it, but that's few and far between.
What do you not like about writing?
Well, just that. I mean, I don't like the having to start it. I think that's. I was the same in college with papers. Even though I liked writing them once I was writing them, I could never start them. And every morning I kind of get up and I tell myself, all right, today I'm going to the computer. I'm not going to browse internet.
Right.
I'm not going to play the game I'm playing. I'm not going to go clean up, you know, rearrange my books in my office. I'm going to get straight to writing. And then I do all those things that I said I wasn't going to do. So that part's frustrating.
I love it. That's having the world at your fingertips, though, Peter. You talk about you're not going to browse the internet, but that works. That's kind of a double-edged sword for writers. You can get on there and see what everybody else is doing, but by the same token, you can also jump on your best friend Google and find out anything you want to know in the world. So
yeah,
I think I can understand that.
Tool.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it?
But
do you ever I'm sorry, go ahead.
But it's also, you know, the greatest procrastination tool invented.
Of course it is.
And yeah.
Of course it is. Do you ever want to walk in the footsteps of your character, go where they go, see what they see?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess I kind of do that to a certain degree. I mean, that's what you're doing if you're writing a character, is trying to imagine how they would react to the situation. Often my characters are quite devious, so I'm not sure I necessarily want to be them, but it's fun to step into those shoes for a little while and be someone who doesn't have morality to stop them from trying to get what they want to get.
Sure,
it's
sure.
Kind of a
I understand
fun
that.
World to enter for a little while.
Are you touring right now for All the Beautiful Lies?
I'm not touring per se, but I am taking two interesting trips over the next 2 weekends. So I'm going to Newburyport Literary Festival up here in New England, in Massachusetts, which is Newburyport's a great place, and they have a great little festival. And then I'm going to North Shore, Vermont, for a literary festival there the next weekend. So I'm doing a little bit of local travel.
And will you go to any of the big conferences? Will you go to Boucher or Thriller Fest?
I am this year. I didn't go last year. I went the year before. So I'm doing Thriller Fest in New York, and I am going to BoucherCon.
I will see you at both places. How wonderful.
Oh, great. We'll get to meet. St. Petersburg, right?
Yes, which is just a couple hours north of me. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I can't wait.
People get to experience Southwest Florida in all its glory in September. It's hot as hell. You know, be prepared for the high 90s, hovering near 100 all the time. Yeah, but it's absolutely beachwear. Shorts and a t-shirt, flip-flops, anything more than that, and you're dressed up. You might as well be in tux. So there you go. Thanks, everybody where we can find you and on the webs, please.
So the best thing to do is to just go to my website, which is peter-swanson.com. And from there, you can link onto my Facebook page, my Twitter account, even my Instagram, I think, and of course, link to my books and where to buy them.
Do you like doing social media?
Yes and no. I think sometimes it's fun. It can be fun. Lately, I think Twitter in particular. Actually, I like Instagram. Facebook as an author is strange because I don't see other people on it. It's just I just post on it because I'm kind of a – when you're an author, you're a business essentially.
Sure.
Twitter is the one I think that that I have the strongest feelings about. It's the most addictive. Lately, it's become just sort of a constant outrage and anger. People shout a lot on Twitter. They're not literally shouting, but they are.
And no, I understand.
It can be a stressful place to be. The book community on Twitter is great, however. I mean, I do follow a lot of other crime writers. You know, people can be very funny. You know, Laura Lippman is very funny on Twitter. And I follow book bloggers who are great. I learn about books. So it's you know, it's half and half. So I like
it's
that book element.
It's a necessary evil in your writer life. Yeah. Yes, I often say if I didn't do digital media, then I wouldn't be on digital social media for sure. It has been a pleasure speaking to you, Peter. I hope that you'll come back again.
Of course.
Whenever you have something else going on, or come back and take the microphone and interview somebody you like. That would be a ton
I'd
of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
Thanks for having me on, and I look forward to meeting you face-to-face at, I guess, Thriller Fest would be the next in New York.
Thriller Fest would be the next, and for sure, and I'm bringing my books for you to sign because I have several of them with your name on them. Thanks for being with me, Peter. I really appreciate it. All best with All the Beautiful Lies. It's a fantastic book. I highly recommend it, and I appreciate you taking the time to speak to me. Have a really good evening.
You too.
All righty. Thanks, Peter.
Yep. Take care.
You too. And that's my Superstar Wednesday. Thank you for being with me, everyone. Go read books. You have got quite a selection after today. Have a great evening. I'll talk to you next week. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.